Well, hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air global network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm Bonner Spring, and today I'm speaking with Parker Adams. Let me tell you a little bit about him. The son of a Navy helicopter pilot, Parker Adams chased great white sharks as a marine biologist before becoming a patent lawyer who litigates multi-million dollar cases for high-tech clients. In his spare time, I'm interrupting the bio to say, in his spare time, he writes, seriously, high-stakes thrillers that feature travel and technology, including the best-selling Seth Walker series under Parker's real name, Joseph Reed. A graduate of Duke University and the University of Notre Dame, he lives in San Diego with his wife and children. And I am delighted to welcome you to Crime Wave, Parker.
I'm delighted to be here. I mean, you and I have known each other for a while now, and I'm so grateful for you having me on. Thank you so much.
It is going to be my pleasure, I'm sure. Now, The Lockbox, which we're going to be talking about today, is your first book writing as Parker Adams. It's an exciting new series and a brand new name for you. But let's catch Crime Wave listeners up on the story behind this new story for you. But first, your earlier books, the Seth Walker books, I think there were three of them, yes?
Yes, that's right. Three books in the Seth Walker series started with Takeoff in 2018. False Horizon was the second one, and Departure was the third one, and that came out in 2020, about 3 weeks before COVID locked the whole world down.
Yeah, that's about when I met you, I believe. So all of these books, so if you look for them, they get descriptions like explosive and 100-yard dash and book form and roller coaster action. Everybody, I'm sure, can get the idea. We're going to cycle back to include more about those books in a bit. But in The Lockbox, the important book for today, you've got another kick-ass heroine, a safe-cracking, no-hold-bars woman by the name of Mana Locke. So tell us more about her and the story behind her story, if you will, and lead us into the action that starts The Lockbox out.
Sure. So you mentioned that I'm writing this under a pen name, and that's the reason is really exactly what you identified. It's a new series. It's a new character. It's a fresh start. I'm trying to make sure it's separate and apart from the Walker series. But yeah, I was talking about COVID. I was stuck at home, watching the world lock down. I think you and I might have both been at Left Coast when that got shut down in San Diego. In 2020. And so I went home and I watched the world, and I'm a big heist movie fan from way back, old movies like The Sting and the original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, all the way up to, like the Ocean's 11 movies and stuff like that. So, I'm sitting there watching, the empty freeways and all the news. And it occurs to me that it is a perfect time to pull off a really big crime. And so I started thinking about that and my love of heists, and immediately the idea was, well, I need a safecracker for this book. And I wanted to make the character as different from Seth Walker as I could. So not only is she a woman, she's a veteran. She's come to safecracking as sort of a second career after leaving the military. And she's a single mom, which comes out in the book. And some people have commented on that in their reviews. So she's very different than Walker. But hopefully, the action and suspense is the same. The idea is she gets called out to a job when the COVID lockdowns are happening, and she gets ambushed there, and she gets kidnapped and forced to participate in what could be the heist of the century.
Yes, she does. And without giving any spoilers, seriously, the grand finale of The Lockbox puts Mana in jeopardy, not less, but I don't think I can count the number of times. Sounds to me, Parker, like you're an advocate of wondering, what's the worst thing that could happen to my character here? Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we all try and do that. We all try and put our characters through the ringer. And especially in this book, because she's, you know, been kidnapped, because she's, you know, being forced to participate in this thing against her will, there were a lot of opportunities to really, you know, sort of turn the screws and make her suffer in ways that hopefully, you know, expose her character and elevate the stakes and all. So I'm glad you feel that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And aside from Mana, there's an interesting cast of I'm not going to call them secondary characters, but that was the word that almost, okay, the not main characters of the book, including her son, who is a very interesting young man, and the folks that kidnapped her. They get very interesting names. If you could just name them off so that we have a sense of who the other characters are, that would be great.
Sure. They all operate sort of with code names. And so there is a strong man named King. There's an acrobatic woman named Queen. And there's a knife-wielding maniac that they refer to as Jack.
Awesome. That's so great. You've already really answered the question that I was going to ask about comparing Mana to Seth Walker, which was a really, really good answer. I'd just like to point out Daniel Gerard once, who's another writer and woman who does interviews, once called Seth Walker Jack Ryan combined with a young Steve Jobs. Do you remember that? I thought that was such a great thing. Now, I wonder what a creative interviewer, which is not going to be me, how they would describe Mana Locke. You want to take a stab at it? I'm not sure we could do that.
Yeah, Danielle's a great friend, and she was very kind with that description of Seth. You know, Mana, I don't have any you know, zippy description of her. I was asked the other day sort of the adjectives that describe her, and I think the ones I gave were, you know, she's loyal. She's incredibly loyal, and that comes out through the book in a variety of ways. She is very physical, and what I mean by that is she's the kind of person who likes to work with her hands, that she's ended up in safe cracking because it's a very, you know, blue collar, get your hands dirty kind of profession. And that is what she enjoys and what she's really, really good at. And she's big physically. I mean, she's very tall. She's very strong. And so, you know, those are kind of the ways I think of her.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't get into trouble. I worried about getting into trouble years ago. When I wrote my debut novel, there was a suicide bomber in it, and I had to do a lot of research. The joke in my house was, oh, the doorbell rings, NSA's come knocking. Okay, let's talk about safe cracking. How did you learn about safe cracking? Come on, tell us all.
Yeah, there weren't any fabulous, dangerous stories. The Walker research, because he's an air marshal, and so I had to do a bunch of research sort of behind the scenes at airports. And I had those similar reactions of, I was in SFO one time doing the research for departure, and an alarm went off behind me as I was taking a picture of a door that I knew I was not supposed to be taking a picture of. And I was like, okay, here we go. But they actually weren't coming for me. But this one was much tamer. I mean, I was frankly limited in what I could do because I was writing it during COVID and there was only, you know, so much you could do, but, you know, there are a lot of resources online these days. I watched a ton of videos by safecrackers who are sort of award-winning, you know, famous safecrackers in the safecracking world. There's actually a whole contest where they compete every year to see who can win. I'm a patent lawyer, and so I'm used to doing deep dives on different kind of technology. And so getting into, you know, locks and safes and all that stuff, that was sort of comfortable territory for me. So that's mostly what went into this book.
Yeah, it's not highly technical, I guess I would say, for all of our listeners, but the intricacy is fascinating. So to follow the conversation a little bit, you have a pretty interesting and varied life, even before you decided to write professionally. How did you get into writing?
Yeah, very roundabout. I've always written, but writing was sort of attendant to the other things I was doing. You know, I grew up wanting to be a scientist. And so, you know, I wrote a bunch of journal articles when I was a scientist, and I was kind of the guy in my lab that a lot of scientists don't enjoy writing. And so I was always the person they kind of pulled in to help them with their articles and things like that. And then when I was looking to make a career change, you know, you do one of those things where you get out a pad and you list, you know, the things you're good at and the things you enjoy. And writing was up there at the top, but it wasn't like, oh, I should go be a writer. It was, you know, what careers, you know, use writing a lot. And that's one of the reasons I ended up being a lawyer, was I knew that they wrote a lot of briefs and my writing skills would come in handy. Honestly, when it comes to fiction, I was just always a really avid reader. You know, I grew up reading books and loving books, and I was the kind of person that, like, when I would go on vacation, you know, as a scientist or a lawyer, I'm old enough, I would stick hard copies. You know, this is back before ebooks. You know, I'd stick, you know, 5 or 6 books in my luggage, you know, when we'd go on vacation, and I'd just, you know, read a book or two a day. And so I was on one of those vacations with my wife, and I was reading John Sanford's Rules of Prey. And it really struck me that, you know, for all the writing I'd done and for all the pride I had in, you know, my sort of analytical nonfiction writing, you know, fiction writing was really kind of the, you know, the Olympics, the gold standard of writing. And I sort of asked myself, wow, like, I wonder if I could do this. I know I'm good at, you know, writing a brief, but could I make the, you know, could I really make the lines sing and make people turn pages and stuff like that? And that was kind of the challenge I threw down to myself, like, let me see if I can do this. And so that's kind of how it began.
That sounds wonderful. Was Seth Walker where you began, or did you begin with something that shall not be named?
Yeah, no, I actually, so we were on vacation. My wife was pregnant with our first daughter, and we were in the tropics, and I had this grand idea for a giant, sprawling Tom Clancy kind of military mm-hmm. fiction thing that happened across 12 time zones and all this stuff. And I started to try and write that thing. And for 6 months, I just kind of pounded my head against the desk until I realized, like, I'm not good enough to write this book yet. And so I went and I wrote a different novel, a much smaller novel that I called it my practice novel. Yeah. And then I wrote the big sprawling spy thing as my second one. Neither of those went anywhere. And they sit in drawers to this day. As you know, we all have books in drawers. And then Takeoff was the third book I wrote. That was the one that got me my agent and got me my deal and, you know, it ultimately got published.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing all of that. That's really true. So with your busy life, you're still working full time, right? How do you make the time to write?
So I get up at 4, and I come into the office and I write here. You know, I, by the time I get here and get a cup of coffee, it's about 4:30. I write here until about 7:30. And then I run home. I usually take one of my kids to school and then I come and I'm a professional lawyer. So I'm a lawyer all day. And then if I have time at night, I do some editing at night. And I try and do that, you know, every single day. And that's the only way I can find to get it done.
That's really interesting. I like the idea of writing in one block of time, separated by whatever else we're doing with our lives, and then coming back and looking at for editing. I'm going to write that down, actually. That sounds like a really cool idea. You mentioned heist movies earlier, and I can certainly see that in your taste in The Lockbox, which has some great, great heist scene movie-like scenes. Are there any other influences on your writing? Movies, obviously, being not writing, but being the units of action that I really saw in your book.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a reader from way back, and so, you know, I grew up reading everything from, you know, Clancy and Michael Crichton. Those were two big ones. I kind of consider myself a little, like, you know, bit of a techno thriller author, because, you know, there's always technology in my books. But I read a lot of science fiction and stuff like that too. I really just, yeah, anything with pace and a little bit of a mystery and a ticking clock. That's what I love. And, you know, that's, you know, the authors that we tend to hang around, that's what they like to write. And so, I try and, be inspired by all those folks and mix that up in the big soup with movies and TV and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's really obvious from looking at you. And I have to tell you, Tharka, that in all the time I've been talking with other authors and doing this podcast, I've met exactly one author who said he didn't grow up reading. Can you believe, one. But that person was in the military and ended up writing stories about what he saw in the military. So he came to it in a different way. But we all grow up as readers and we all have our influences. And thank you for mentioning Michael Crichton. I didn't dare do it. But yes, the techno stuff is right there with it. You writing something new that you could share with us?
Yeah, we're in that weird period before this book launches. It comes out next week. And so, as you know, there's a ton of, publicity and things you got to do to get a book off the ground. But in the background, I'm working on a military espionage kind of thing that might be a new series. I've also got a couple of ideas out to the publisher for what might be Mana Book 2 if people like Mana Book 1. And so, we'll see what happens. Hopefully the lockbox is a big success and people respond well to it. I would love that. But if it ends up just being a standalone and we've got to go in a different direction, hopefully I'll be able to do that too.
Sounds really interesting. I hope that Mana does take off. I'd like to tell everyone how much I enjoyed it. Now, before we go off the air, tell everybody where they can find you, where you're most active online. And also, sure. If you're going to be doing, one more thing, if you're going to be doing live things for your launch in the coming weeks, you might mention a couple of those as well, or where people can find that information out.
Of course. So all my events are posted on my website, which is josephreedbooks.com. You can also get there by parkeradamsbooks.com. I have both domains and they lead to the same place because it's the same guy doing all the stuff. In terms of events, my book comes out on Tuesday, the 19th of March. The night before, I'll be at San Diego's Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore for the official launch. And then I'll be at Austin's Book People on Friday, the 22nd. And then I'll be at Los Angeles's Book Jewel on Saturday, the 23rd, as I make my way back from Texas. So very excited for next week. Lots of stuff going on, but would love to see people at the events and hope they come out and patronize your local bookstore because we need those guys.
Amen. Yes, please patronize your local bookstores and your libraries and all those other cool places. Listen, Parker, exactly. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I really hope that you have wonderful success with the lockbox. And in your future, when one of those books comes out next, I hope you'll come back and say hello again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation, and I will come back as many times as you want me.
Bless you. Thanks a lot.